Pull up,
Frank,
headshot,
Frank,
sit down,
Frank,
stand up,
Frank,
pass out,
Frank,
wake up,
Frank,
faded,
Frank,
faded.
Now I done grew around some people living their life in bottles. Granddaddy had the golden flask, backstroke every day in Chicago. Some people like the way it feels, some people wanna cure their sorrow. Some people wanna fit in with the popular, that was my problem. I was in a dark room, loud tunes, looking to make a vow soon that I'ma get fucked up, filling up my cup. I see the crowd mood changing by the minute, and the record on repeat. Took a sip, then another sip, then somebody said to me, nigga, why you babysitting? Only two or three shots, I'ma show you how to turn it up a notch. First you get a swimming pool full of liquor, then you dive in it. Pool full of liquor, then you dive in it.
Welcome to the place where no topic is left untouched. I'm your host, Lexis Moore, and this is The Free Space. Unfiltered, unrestricted conversation. Tune in as I discuss any and every kind of topic, giving my own opinion of what's going on in the world, while also sparking conversation using other people's point of view. New episodes drop on Fridays on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Make sure you follow The Free Space on Facebook and Instagram at The Free Space Podcast. Follow on Twitter at @the_free_space. And if you got any questions, comments, or concerns, you need some advice, or need to get something off your chest, make sure you email the podcast at thefreespacepod@gmail.com. And remember, whatever you want to say, speak freely, because that's the motto of this show. Well, I'm back with another week, and this is episode 53, entitled There's Something in This Liquor. And I am accompanied by his first time here on The Free Space, but not our first time podcasting together, because, you know, we go way back. My nigga, my bro, Marcus Watts, is in the building.
Yes, ma'am. Glad to be here for sure.
Yes, very, very happy to have you here, bro. Now my son is needing help. Hold on. We'll pause right here. Okay, we back. Y'all know motherhood and parenthood, because Watts got his kids with him too.
Definitely.
That we had some technical difficulties when we first started, but we gonna make this work. But yes, I got my bro Watts that I go way back, like four flats on the Cadillac with going on.
Yes,
we was gonna say earlier, it's been 10 years we've been knowing each other.
So, 10 years.
10 years. And it's been a lot.
A whole lot.
But I'm happy to have him here, and he's gonna be chopping it up with me. As y'all know, May has been Mental Health Awareness Month, and so all the episodes I've been doing for the month of May have been centered around mental health. But in this episode, I want to talk more about mental health and how it coincides with substance use. But before we get into that, y'all know I got my topics that we gonna be commenting on. So to get things started, the speak freely topic for this week is just the fact that racism is running real rampant, and we're already in a pandemic and a quarantine. It's just like, we just can't get no reprieve. Just, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was Ahmaud Arbery and Sean Reed hitting right here at home in Indianapolis. As of recently, there's been more stories coming out. There's been Breonna Taylor, who was gunned down in her own home. There was just recently the black man that the white lady decided to call the police on, all because he asked her to put a leash on her dog when she was already breaking the rules of the park. And him as a bird watcher was just like, hey, ma'am, you know, could you abide by the rules that are set forth? And she tried to say that he was threatening to harm her. Now she fired from her job. So there's that. And then just yesterday, we had the unfortunate incident, and let's call it what it is, murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer who was arrested. They were arresting him for writing a bad check, fraud check, whatever the case may be. But it went too far, and that he literally was putting his knee, like lunging his knee on the side of his neck. And the whole time you can hear George Floyd saying, I can't breathe, over and over again, until he eventually passed out and died later, pretty much from asphyxiation and suffocation. And what makes this even worse is the fact that there were at least 3 to 4 other police officers right there witnessing this take place and did nothing. There was a woman who recorded the video, and the video has gone viral. And pretty much we again are back where we started at square one. We're tired, we're frustrated, we're annoyed, we're angry, we're pissed off. We're in some cases numb, and in some cases it's just depressing, and it's too much to read and too much to bear over and over and over again. And not even just over and over again, but when it's back to back to back cases such as this. And I know me personally, I've gone through different emotions. Like I said, everything I just named, I have felt. I felt fear as far as, am I going to be the next Sandra Bland? Me and Watts both being parents, the fact that we both have sons, I'm sure we've both had fears of, are our children going to be the next Tamir Rice or the next Trayvon Martin? And I wanted Watts to speak on this too, because I know as a Black man, he's got to have his own individual feelings about this, because although there have been, has been Black men and women dying at the hands of police brutality, majority of it has been our Black men. And it says something when the fact that my entire timeline is not even just outcries for justice and outcries of anger, but having to constantly tell Black men how much we love them. Not saying that we shouldn't, but the fact that we have to keep constantly saying it in these type of situations to let them know that their lives do matter and that they're valued. Because the way the media is portraying it, you would think that they're nothing. And just overall on top of that, the frustrations of the fact that I've seen so many statuses asking and calling out for our white friends and counterparts to speak up. They can, you know, speak and post about everything else political in regards to this debate or the presidential debate and the election and everything else. But when it comes to police brutality and Black Lives Matter, they're silent, or they go into, well, what did he do? Maybe he deserved it. You don't know the state. Wait, maybe he hurt people. No, when we got Dylan Roofs and mass murderers walking around here of the Caucasian race who have murdered and bombed and literally wreaked havoc and get nothing but a slap on the wrist. But yet our people, for doing like the most minimal of crimes, or just even if they had did something that was to that severity, are gunned down maliciously for just because they're Black. And it's sad that in here in 2020, we are basically living in what I consider like a new Jim Crow, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'll say, Watts, I want to give you a chance to speak freely on the subject. What are feelings that you've had in regards to when we're seeing these stories of police brutality and Black Lives Matter, and how does it affect you as a Black man and a father?
Really less outrage from me than most people, mainly just because the type of person I am. It takes a lot to get me riled up. So I'm more of a logical thinker, and really it's unfortunate because I don't know the answer. It's something that I think about, and I try to be open-minded about and see the people that are angry. I understand, some of the points that people making about, you know, how to behave ourselves when we in these situations, you understand it to a certain degree. So I think I'm more on the, as they say, fuck 12 side, but I still gotta be myself. I still gotta think for myself and realize that none of us know. A lot of people got a lot to say, but none of us know. So I think the only way we can find out is if people try it. Start killing cops and see what happened. And then we'll know. Or start looting and see what happened. Until all options have been exhausted, which is going to be impossible, we just really never know. So I think it's more about being safe. If you got kids, you know, trying to get back home. That's all I'm trying to do. Anyway, I got, you know, 3 boys from ages 11 to 1, and I just got to get back to the house. So that scarier thing is less about me being out in the streets looting and protesting and marching. It's more about, you know, the decisions I make to raise my kids and prepare them for what's probably going to get worse, to be honest, in the future, because we already getting numb to it, you know, and we just now starting to see a lot of it with social media and body cams and all this stuff. And we already pretty much numb to it in a certain extent. You know, people, they always outrage, but, you know, some of us, you know, we kind of numb to it. We see it so much that, you know, we steadily trying to figure out what could happen. So I think as the occurrences rise, more and more stuff is going to be acceptable by these judges and these jurors. And I actually think it's going to get worse for us, and that's definitely not good. So, man, I really don't even know. I don't know how to feel. That, and that's pathetic.
It's not pathetic. That's real. Because I think we've all gone to, like, I don't know how to feel. And then even with the George Floyd case, there, you know, it's already been said that the officer's been fired and stuff. But it's like, I can't get excited about him being fired.
No,
that because he's already had, y'all let him keep a job from 2011. I'm sorry, 2011.
I think he was actually cutting up before that.
It might have been 2008. He's got a rap sheet of complaints of how he has acted out in the field. The fact that the maneuver he was using was not a part of de-escalation training, and that's the other thing, and that could be a whole nother topic, but y'all know me and my social work hat be on with this kind of stuff. But a lot of it is, we know that racism and prejudices, like I said, has been our law enforcement. Like I said, it goes all the way back to Jim Crow and segregation. We've been known that. And unfortunately, that's not something we can fully control, because we know racism is something that's taught. It's passed down. It didn't just come out of thin air. That's something that's generational. And so, we can do our best to help change the minds, but some people is going to continue to be ignorant. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. But the other issue is the fact that in our law enforcement, that this shit keeps happening and nobody's making changes. Nobody's pulling for or asking for reform. Nobody's giving these police officers mental health evaluations and psychiatric evaluations to know that they're even in their right mind to do what they're supposed to do as police officers. And that's to serve and to protect. If you're supposed to serve and protect, that don't mean you pick and choose who you serve and protect. You're serving and protecting everyone. So even the people that you're arresting, they're entitled to that because they are still American citizens. According to the Constitution that this country holds so near and dear, they still have a right to a fair and speedy trial. So you're denying them that right by outright murdering them before they can even get to to see a judge, a jury, anything before they even get in the damn police car. So it's like you're breaking constitutional rights right then and there, but you don't see it that way because of your mindset and how these police officers are taught to view us as Black people, minorities, those who deal with mental health. They have no real de-escalation training. They have no cultural competency training and understanding how this shit works. But yeah, And I know part of it is that issue, but the other part of it, like I said, is just blatant racism and discrimination and prejudice. And the fact that this shit is still being upheld in our law enforcement, but yet you want us to have so much sympathy. And I do, because I know there are cops out there who are upholding the law, that are serving and protecting. So I really try my best to not drag them down along with the ones who are ignorant. But it becomes so hard because you really never know. I saw, a couple weeks ago after the Ahmaud Arbery and Sean Reed story came out, I saw a video of a white dude with an axe in his hand, and he's literally swinging it at the police officer, swinging it, cursing, yelling. You can tell he's either belligerent or not in his right mind, clearly. But it's just the simple fact that he has the weapon. And the police officer in the video with their hands, I'm like, hey, sir, let's calm down. Let's talk about this. But yeah, you have all these unarmed Black men and Black women dying at traffic stops, selling cigarettes. Like, just you can't even play cops and robbers. Like, you can't go to the store. You can't do nothing because you're Black. And it makes no sense to me that there are people who are still acting like this shit is cool, or it's not really happening. And it does make you kind of, like you said, Watts, make you feel like, well, I don't know what the answer. Should we start killing cops? Should we be now as far as looting?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't know, like, what we supposed to do.
What are you supposed to do? Like, we don't want to act the fool and be the gorillas and the animals and the uncivilized people that they already think we are. But then it's like, but we're so angry and outraged. What else are we supposed to do? You know,
right.
is it a matter of Black leadership? Is it a matter of us and us making sure we are compliant? Because there's times we've been compliant and we still lost lives. And it's,
yeah. The bottom line is that we're not asking for, it's the old narrative that you're not asking for too much. You're just asking the wrong person. Mm. We're not asking for too much. We asking to be treated equally. While we can't get walked into the back seat or into the jail or to the courthouse the same way they do.
It's okay, honey. Mommy's kisses. You're fine. It's okay. I don't know how you bumped your hand. You're supposed to be going to sleep. You're okay. Go on, go to sleep. Good night. Night night. Love you.
But yeah,
so, yeah, like you saying, you said, why can't we get walked to the police car? Why can't we get a meal? Dylan got a meal.
we don't want to be treated better. We want to be treated equal, and we're not asking for too much. We just asking the wrong people, because obviously we see what side they on.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our face. It's just it's so hard for us to accept some things. Just because I think really at the heart of it all, we all good people with good intentions. Not saying Caucasians or anything that they aren't, but I'm saying at the base of it, we not asking for y'all to make everybody a millionaire and give us 800 credit scores. And
right.
We talking, this is the basics, bro. Don't kill me.
Right. Basic human decency, and yet for some reason it sounds like we're asking for so much.
Yeah, like that's what's the confusing part. That's why people angry. That's why some people are ready to fight back. That's why they looting freely, and they about tired of it. And, yeah. And it's gonna be some bloodshed, unfortunately, if I had to guess, as far as on their end. But man, yeah. It's gonna be scary.
Yeah, I just know something's got to change, because otherwise the cycle's just going to continue. And I think it does take us actually really coming together and, you know, putting bullshit aside. I think it is going to take some of our white counterparts to actually stand up and acknowledge it, not just those who are in human service and public service fields, but those who are part of the 1%, those who are in law enforcement, you know, those who quote unquote technically have the power to help make a change and yet are sitting silent because they don't want to get involved or whatever the case may be. But yeah, it is hard to just keep watching this over and over again. Like, we tired.
I'm pretty fed up with watching. Yeah. I'm one of the people that get off social media when it's too dark.
Yeah.
So when that stuff happened, I can only take so much.
Yeah.
It get bad for my man.
Definitely, for sure. Stuff,
and I just got to kind of take some time in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. All right. We're gonna get off the depressing stuff, try and have a little bit of fun on this episode.
Yeah.
So we're gonna head into Hollywood highlights.
Oh shoot. If you are what you say you are, a superstar, then have no fear, the camera's here, and the microphones, and they wanna know, oh, 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 the return, if you are what you say. And all right, we're going forward with Black Excellence. Black Excellence this week,
I know y'all gonna probably get tired of me shouting out Megan Thee Stallion, but I don't care. Real hot girl shit. Shout out to Megan and of course Queen B. Savage Remix is number one on the Billboard. The Billboard Hot 100. If that ain't black excellence, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to tell you because I mean, come on now. Like
the fact that's major.
It's major. We have two black women, one who's an OG in the game, Megan, who's coming in, she's been in the game, but like she's really been in this last like year or two, you know, really making her mark. And the fact that these two queens was able to come together and make such a difference, like, you know, they already getting their own individual days in the city of Houston, which is dope. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they were able to top the charts of the Billboard, and we know that's run by white folks. Anytime,
definitely,
we can break a ceiling is an accomplishment and a celebration. So I'm not just saying it because I love Megan Thee Stallion, because I love Beyonce, but it's just a simple fact that it's breaking barriers and breaking ceilings for the next generation to feel like they can do the same. So shout out to Megan and B. I hope Savage Remix stays up there number one, or any other collabs they got in the future. Y'all just keep giving us great music and keep breaking barriers.
Definitely.
In TV and film, so bro, you been watching Insecure? Do you watch Insecure?
Nah, I don't watch Insecure. I've been seeing a lot of fellas though watch it. I might need to check it out.
Yes, you do. There's actually a lot of men who watch Insecure, a lot, and that's because Issa Rae definitely has a good balanced cast of male and female issues in our age group, millennials and whatnot. So it's really a show that everybody can relate to. And there's the typical love, dating, relationship stuff, but there's also things as far as our identity, how we see ourselves as black people. Issa does well with blending the comedy as well as the issues we face in our community and just, you know, in general. So it's really dope. You definitely should watch it.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, I say, well, I'll give a quick recap. So for anyone that, for those of us that do watch, just to give you, it's a season four watch, but the seasons are 8 episodes of pieces. The first season is we're getting 10 episodes, which we're happy for because we're getting a lot. Issa's giving us a lot in this season. And so this season has been a lot of Issa stepping out on her own. She walked away from her job and trying to build up her own brand and doing something for her community in Inglewood, California, because that's where it resides. And she's been having some growing pains and issues with her best friend, Molly. Like, it got real deep. Like, they almost fought at this block party Issa threw. Like, Molly got her.
Molly tweets.
Yeah. If you see everybody on Molly head, that's why, because she been cutting up. Like, she stepped to Issa in her face talking about, what you gonna do? I said, oh, she's this bitch ready to fight. When you say what you gonna do, that's fighting words.
I've been seeing the tweets.
Yeah. Molly been cutting up this season. She has been. So, the last couple episodes have been the aftermath. So, last week we had Issa's episode giving us her perception of what she's doing and her feelings and how she's processing the aftermath of their blow up. And this past week on Sunday was Molly's solo episode, where she got to go on a vacation with she got an Asian bae, because I think Molly ain't had the best history relationships, but now she is in a solid, healthy relationship, but she's still dealing with her personal issues and how they influence her and Issa's friendship. And so, you know, she went on the vacation, which everybody in the timeline was like, I need a vacation, me, myself included. I was like, I want a vacation. I ain't never had one. Why is it that I'm 29 and I've never had a vacation? This don't make no damn sense. So we was all in our feelings on that end. But there was also, issues as far as issues between, she kept bringing Issa a lot up on the trip, and her Asian bae, Andrew, had to like learn like, babe, we on this trip, you need to chill. But she also got a reality check with a lot of things as far as her being able to accept the fact that she's got some things she still needs to work out in her own life. She don't let things go very easily. And so towards the end of the episode, she called back her therapist, which was all like, thank God. Ow, what? Right there where? Oh, let me see. Mwah. All better. I told you I got to be mothering podcast at the same time, y'all. That's how it is.
Gotcha.
So she called her therapist at the end of the episode. And we were all like, thank God, because she was seeing a therapist in season two. And which we was like, yeah, girl, you need that. But yeah, she finally decided, let me humble myself. And I, for one, the reason why that was not just because of the jokes on Molly, but you know, because it's Mental Health Awareness Month and I am a therapist, there is still a lot of stigma in regards to going to therapy. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I don't need it, I can figure it out on my own, or we don't like to admit when we need help. And I think that's like one of the biggest barriers we have when it comes to being able to work on our mental and emotional health and just overall making sure that we are the best people we can be. Sometimes pride does get in the way. I dealt with it, and I had to come to 2019 made me be like, sis, you need to go talk to someone. And so I've been in therapy, and I had some struggles with that, because it's like, well, I am a therapist. I know all the interventions. I know all the techniques, everything. Why is it that I'm having issues with PTSD and stuff like that? But even in my self-confidence and, you know, dating relationships, it's like, why did I got this shit figured out? But my therapist even had to tell me that you can't be your own therapist. And I think that's a lot of what we do sometimes in our lives. We try to be our own therapist until it gets to the point where it's like, bro, sis, you can't do it, honey, and it's okay. Yeah. And I say we're gonna get into, I know for you and your part when we get into that topic, but I had to put that out there because I want to let people know, like, listen, don't try to be your own therapist. If you dealing with some shit, go talk to someone. Like, please do that, because it's only gonna benefit you in the end. Like, I had to put that out there. that was like my biggest takeaway from the whole episode, was like, listen, don't wait till it gets to the point where it boils up and boils over. Like, go talk that shit out, because you're hurting yourself and doing yourself a disservice when you're holding all that shit in and not being willing to face and work out your problems. So please,
definitely,
you go talk to someone. I promise you, it'll help. It'll lift the load. It'll lift the burden. Let me tell you.
ASAP.
Yes. And then speaking of Issa Rae, her new movie, which is also kind of Black excellence, a movie that was supposed to be released in theaters, but because of Rona. Yeah, her being on her bullshit. But it's cool though, because Issa's still getting her coin with the Lovebirds, because Netflix said, look, sis, look, you can't go to theaters. We got you, boo. Come. Shawty, swing my way. We'll stream it for you. And it's like,
smart.
Yes, very smart. And it's like number, like in top three movies, you know, being streamed since it released this past weekend. I got to watch on Memorial Day weekend. I fell asleep on a little bit. I had been cooking and having mimosas that day, so it snuck up on me and I fell asleep on a couple parts. But overall, I thought it was funny. What did you think of the movie, Watts?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty cool movie. I think people probably thought about it too much. They wanted it to be deeper than that. I think it was just her trying to be on some more comedic romance type of stuff, not big on no deep life, social issue type of vibe. Maybe that's kind of what Insecure got. I think people was kind of expecting that. But yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I was laughing. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I actually saw that some people felt like her, and I can't remember the actor's name right now, but her and her boyfriend, like, they're in the movie, their chemistry was better than her and Lakeith Stanfield's chemistry in the photograph. Now, I was like, I'm a little biased because I love Lakeith Stanfield, and I think he's so fine. But I
watch that.
Yes, the photograph was good, too. I liked it. I felt like they had really good chemistry in a sense, like, you know, that. With Issa, you know, the way she does her sarcastic jokes and comedy, he was able to go toe to toe with her in the movie. So I think that really added that element to it. But overall, like I said, Issa, there's not much that Issa Rae does that doesn't deliver, because she's just dope in her own right. So Issa, you just keep doing what you do. Keep shining, girl. Keep working, keep grinding, keep getting these coins and secure the bag, sis. Yes.
Definitely.
All right. And then in the music world, so we got to talk about Verses. Did you catch the 112 versus Jagged Edge versus Battle
A little bit, probably about 10 minutes worth.
A little bit. I know there's a lot of people that dipped out because of all the technical difficulties. I stayed in there like a champ, though. And yeah. I got my little R&B life, don't get me wrong. I love the verses, not just because of the music, but I love to join in on the Twitter commentary. That's where I get my life and the jokes and stuff. It's a lot of
fun. Yeah, they was clowning.
Definitely clowning. And I guess apparently, so after the battle, there was a kind of like a post statement that a lot of the reason why folks, I guess, have the technical difficulties that they've been having with verses because Swiss and Timbaland actually provide the sound equipment that's needed and folks don't be wanting to use it. And I'm right. Like, so y'all niggas just want to be stubborn. Okay. Because
basically,
yeah.
Niggas gonna be niggas.
Niggas gonna be niggas. Exactly. And so now they've actually been setting up that going forward that you cannot do the verses unless you use the equipment they have. And so I feel like that's what they need. They need to set some ground rules because folks is wilding and we Teddy Riling and Nellying up in here. And then it does kind of ruin it because it's like I can't enjoy the song because I can't hear it. I can't make right. it out. So, yeah. And a lot of us love the vibe that Jill Scott and Erica's verses battle had, which didn't even feel like a battle anymore. And then T-Pain and Lil Jon, like that was a good one. So, you know, we living for these nostalgic moments, but when the sound is messing up, you know, like with anything, if you go to a concert or whatever, when the sound is messing up, it's going to throw off the vibe. It's not going to work.
Yeah, it's going to mess up the mood.
Yeah, so hopefully they get it together for this next battle, which is apparently going to be, we're going back to church, y'all, Kirk and Fred. We come, do you want a revolution? Whoop, whoop.
That's going to be crazy.
Crazy. Now, don't get me wrong. I like some Fred Hammond, but I love me some Kirk. So I'm Team Kirk all day. All day. I know Kirk don't technically sing, but that nigga write, that nigga play, he direct, he ad-lib, he the hype man.
Mm-hmm.
He still sell out shows. He still making albums and Luck Theory is my jam. Like, listen, a lot of us, those of us, you know, whether you grew up in church or not, you know Kirk Franklin, okay? You may not know everybody else, but you know Kirk Franklin. You heard God's Property. You heard What You're Looking For. You heard Revolution at somebody's church and on somebody's radio. Somebody, I know I had the, me and my mom had the What You're Looking For cassette tape. So it's real over here.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy.
I feel like Kirk is taking it, me personally. I'm Team Kirk all day.
Yeah, they gonna turn it into, I don't know, I don't think it's really been no battle since the T-Pain joint, but
yeah,
I think people just vibing.
The vibe, yeah. We just going to worship.
It's less competition. Yeah, it's going to be a big worship, I already know.
Yes, and that's fine. We can worship, go before the throne. We need that in this quarantine. Amen?
Definitely.
Yes.
The world is going crazy.
Yes, but I'm also going to get my 90s child life, like, for real. Because there's a few Kirk songs I got some I still remember the praise dances, too.
They used to cut up.
Okay, like, everybody had a praise dance to Revolution, and that was the jam. So, like, I can't wait to get my life off this next quote unquote versus battle. And you know, like I said, if we know worshiping and going before the throne, that's all right too. Amen. Glory.
Man. It's gonna be something to see.
Definitely, definitely. And in the sports world, which you know it ain't been too much since you know everything been on lockdown, but apparently the NBA is trying to revive the NBA season, hopefully in sometime of late July. I guess they're working with Disney. Walt Disney somehow, some way.
Yep.
I'm not sure how this is gonna go. Don't get me wrong, I've missed basketball. You know, it's kind of been weird not having basketball, but I'm not sure if this is the time to revive it. And I ain't gonna lie, me personally, I want my football season a little bit more. I need to have I got my Steelers shirt on right now. I need to make sure we still gonna have football season. If I don't have football season, I think I will cry.
Yeah, it's I think the dilemma now, outside of the safety, is like playing meaningless games. Mm-hmm. I don't think the players don't want to play meaningless games.
Right, right.
It's almost playoff time anyway. They trying to get to the playoffs. If we gonna play, let's make it worth something and keep it pushing. So
right. Well, I mean, technically, playoff time. I mean, June, we'd be in the finals at this point. You know, by June.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in general when they started to cancel the games and stuff. Yeah. You know, it was almost time. So
yeah. Good point. You right.
They ain't trying to go back and play them last 15 games or however right. many it is.
Like at this point, let's just go based off records. We already know who been leading. Let's go on and just take them. Let's go on to finals time. Let's go on and do that.
Yeah, I think they're gonna do something like that if they do it. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make no sense to me anyway to do it no other way.
Yeah, definitely. Because it's like if there is a football season, then you start clashing for times and networks and all that, and it becomes a mess. So it's like, let's knock this shit out, player. Let's just go on and do that.
I mean, you got to think too about the bottom tier teams. Golden State Warriors probably done won about 15 games. Like, what are we going to play another 15 games for? It's not going to change nothing. It's pointless. So.
At all. Yeah. Unfortunately, this was not Golden State's year. I feel like they'll be back, though. You know, Steph been looking healthy. He was doing all right. So, before everything got crazy. So, I feel like Golden State will be back next year, which I do. As far as the West, I do love Golden State. That's my team out the West. I do love my Pacers for the hometown team. So, yeah, those are the two I'll be watching.
And hope that
either one of them. I'll be hoping one of them is going to make it. That's how I be feeling.
Yeah, Team LeBron, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, I need them Lakers to get that ring. That's all I was waiting on. It's going to be finals.
They was leading the West, too. It was like everything flipped. Like, last year was not their year. Now this year is their year. So, we'll see what happens. Yeah. If they make the season, they're able to get the season to come back. We'll see what's going. How's it going to go?
Yeah, it's trying time, so we'll see what's going on.
It is trying times.
Ooh-wee.
All right, and now we're gonna head on into Lex Got the Tea, because y'all know I keeps the tea.
Oh no, she didn't.
Oh yes, she did.
Her girlfriend's boo to be all wrapped up in licious.
All wrapped up.
So, for Boot Up and Broken Up this week, it seems like Neo and his wife, Crystal Smith, have reconciled. If y'all have been keeping up with the Free Space episodes, there were some episodes a while back where I had reported they were definitely on their way to divorce. Neo actually went public in stating that they were filing for divorce, but we're going to try and be as amicable as possible, for the sake of their family and whatnot. But as I was looking on my Instagram today, I seen a video post from the Shade Room where Crystal had, on her Instagram story, Neo popped up in the story. And they was flirting and kikiing and looking real cute. So I was like, oh, well, maybe they went and did some counseling, I don't know what happened. I don't know if it was a cheaper to keep her type of situation or what. But apparently they all right now. So, hey, I'm all for black love, thriving and working out as long as it's healthy and not toxic. So kudos to them. Hopefully they can keep it together. There's also Tamar Braxton. She living with her new boo. They've been living together during this little quarantine. She said it had taken a lot for her after her divorce from Vince to get back out there in the dating game. But she always felt bad because she wanted her son to have siblings. And in her new relationship, she feels like that might just happen. It might just be in the cards. A marriage, some kids and whatnot. So I was like, okay, girl. You better bounce back. Yes. Like I said, I'm all for black love. I don't have anyone I don't have anyone broken up this week. So just kudos to the black couples who are out here making it, doing their thing. Like I said, we need a little positivity in this quarantine every now and then. We can't talk about all the doom and gloom all the time.
Right.
And then for the big T, so I put these two together. because it's kind of the same issue. Folks are making comments and not being mindful of the message that they're portraying to the people, to the culture. So Joe Biden, as we all know, is the Democratic presidential candidate. And, you know, so of course, you know, we all know Joe as he was serving under Barack Obama. And for a long time, we felt like Joe could be invited to the cookout. We felt like he was down for the cause. We was riding with Joe. But Joe has also had some things come up, you know, as far as political past that had us question, like, okay, is he really for the black folks? Is he really for us or not? And yes, honey, what's wrong? Why are you just standing there? Terrence just came in just all silent. What's wrong? No, you gonna say hi? Say hi. You don't say hi? Okay. Then go back to bed and go to sleep. Good night. Night. Go on back to sleep now. Go ahead. Go back to bed. Go on back to bed. Good night. No, you can't stay in here. Go on back to bed. Good night. No, you can't stay in here. Good night. Going back to bed. Good night. Good night. So yeah, Joe had his question, like, maybe we should have invited him to the cookout. You know, folks have been on the fence, especially with this election and the whole lesser of two evils debate. And now even more so, it's been added some fuel to the fire because of his most recent interview with Charlamagne Tha God on the Breakfast Club. And he made the statement of, if you're not voting for me, or no, if you're gonna vote for Trump and you're a black person, you're not really black. So that didn't go over too well with a lot of our people. And so it has had folks like, this is really what we got to choose from. My opinion on, he shouldn't have said what he said in the way that he said it. I feel like what the message he was trying to convey is, as a black person, how can you vote for Trump knowing what he stands for? That I could completely understand. Or not just as a black person, but any minority, because Trump is clearly racist, misogynistic, homophobic, bigot, all that. So he's made that clear since day one. So I understand that idea behind it, but in the way that he said it, I understand why that ruffled some feathers. Overall though, as far as in regards to the whole lesser of two evils and why, and not people not voting, is BS. Cause we still need to vote at the end of the day. And I'd rather us vote for Biden or hell, even the independent candidate before too many votes get in there to get Trump back in office, because then we're going to be going through another 4 years of mess. You know, and as far as, you know, politicians and their history, there's only so many politicians in our U.S. history that's ever been fully for black people, minorities, the poor, you know, across the board. And as far as how they've been able to handle those things, if you really want to look in U.S. history, I mean, the best people we can really say would be like FDR and probably Barack Obama. And I know some folks are going to be mad at me, but I'm going to say Bill Clinton too. I know there was the crime bill that with the mass incarceration, I understand all that, but y'all folks be forgetting that's not all Bill. Congress had a part in that too. Y'all be forgetting how the branches of government work. So I just want to make that clear that everything that gets signed into law is not necessarily from the president. A lot of that is from Congress, depending on who's running shit up in there. So y'all need to go back and review y'all branches of government and how they work.
right.
But yeah, overall, I just feel like, look, like I said, we still need to vote, because regardless of what people try to say, that our vote doesn't matter, it really does. I mean, that's how we got stuck with Trump in the first place. How you feeling about it, Watts?
Unfortunately, man, I'm one of the people that did not vote the last time.
Okay.
I feel like that too, like lesser two evils. I don't know if we ever gonna really catch nobody that's for us like we think.
Mm-hmm. I would say maybe Elizabeth Warren was probably the closest. I would definitely, Elizabeth, I was low key team Warren, to be honest.
I think the cards is just too stacked against them, not against us, but against somebody who would come in and really hold us down. Mm-hmm. I think they would pigeonhole them too bad, and they'd be blackballed and out of there before they make it that far. Mm-hmm. I think the thing with Barack, it was like one of those rare cases where it was super undeniable.
Right.
Because he's just, in general, just one of the greatest people ever. You
yes.
know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
this is just,
you know what I mean? So, like you said, of course, some of the stuff people might say, he didn't do this, or he could have did that, or he should have did one. But at the end of the day, it's still politics.
Yeah.
It's still politics. I think we kind of forget that and feel mm-hmm. like this. He's the ruler of the free world. But like you said, man, them decisions, it's people making decisions that he can't do nothing about.
Yep.
So, you know, I think we kind of wish it was like, whatever he say goes. We need somebody that can jump in there and say a bunch of stuff and it work out in our favor. And nobody can do nothing about it. But that's just not the way the government works, and it's never going to happen.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, because I distinctly remember how when the Affordable Care Act was first being signed into law, and then that whole government shutdown occurred. And so many people were so up in arms about, you know, the whole falling into the gap and being penalized. All people could focus. And that's the thing, people have to realize, like, depending on what media channels you watch, they're going to be biased. You know, we all know Fox News is Republican. Come on now. So they're only going to report what works in their favor to get you to see their side. So, like, literally when everybody I worked in a health clinic for my practicum in undergrad, and so that offered services to those who didn't have insurance. And so we were helping people get signed up. And literally every person that came in complaining kept saying this, what I don't get how Obamacare is going to tax us and penalize us. And you can tell it was because they didn't do their research. And it's like, and so I had to inform them, because I had been researching it for my class final papers and projects and stuff. I would inform them, let them know, like, you know, a lot of this is not Obama, it's Congress. And not even just Congress, it's our state governments, because the states didn't, like, Indiana, Republican, Georgia, Republican, Virginia, Republican, all those traditional Republican states voted to not expand Medicaid, which is state funded and ran by the state. Therefore, in not expanding Medicaid, that's why you have people like yourself falling in this gap. So if you really want to put the blame on folks, it really comes down to, honestly, the Republican, the party that you supporting. Right. You can blame them. It's not Obama, honey. It's the state government. It's Congress. It's the very folks that you steady backing and supporting that are actually causing you to be in this predicament that you are. And when you explain it, it's like, oh, yes. It's like, people got to go back and review U.S. history. I didn't pay attention in class or what, but.
And that's the reason why the Trump stuff is so magnified, because his agenda is their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So it ain't nobody going against it. So now we kind of seeing it, right, for the first time really in the modern era,
mm-hmm.
where it's like just, it's blatant.
Yeah.
Like I said, bigotry, racism, sexism.
And all it's chaos.
This stuff, it's just in our face. And we like, what? But it's been there the whole time. But now they got a fucking mascot.
Mm-hmm.
He's going nuts.
And we're in a place to understand it.
And they love it.
Yeah, and we in a place to understand it now, because it is directly affecting us now. You know, mm-hmm. we somewhat understood it, but now that it's affecting, like, a lot of us, as far as us, those of us who got student loans.
It's undeniable.
Right, it's undeniable. And yet some people still refuse to see it. So we'll see what happens as we keep going with this debate, or the presidential debate, elections, all that stuff. On the other end of people who need to mind their comments and things, so this whole Doja Cat issue, first let me say this, I've only known the one little song by Doja Cat, so I wasn't all like, oh my god, like, I wasn't like freaking out too much. I was shocked, but I wasn't like, ugh, like torn about it. But apparently homegirl had been in some chat rooms with other white supremacists, making jokes, using the N-word, just cutting up.
Clowning.
clowning. And so then she came back after the video surfaced. She came back on Instagram and was apologizing for anything that was misunderstood, stating that she's not a racist. Womp, womp, womp. Doot, doot, doot. Look, sis, if you said it, you said it. Okay. Now, do I believe that people can mature and change? Absolutely. I'm not sure how long ago this video was. I'm not sure if it was when she was younger or if this was like recently. I don't have that information. But, you know, you gotta be, you can't just be doing anything, everything. You saying hi to your Uncle Watts? Yeah. Okay, you need to go to bed, Terrence. Go to bed. Mommy. No, you can't stay up. Mommy. You can't stay up. Say goodnight. Say goodnight. He's it. Night. All right, go to bed. Good night. But yeah, like you can't. I feel like sometimes people, they say stuff and then, and kind of like Joe Biden, you know, he said what he said and then issued an apology. But like, you know, and sometimes it do be the heat of the moment. And so I get it. But there's, I feel like there's just some things you, we just know you can't say and can't do. And sis, that was one of them. Like, why are you in this chat room? Like, why? Why? When you know the very people you chopped it up and joking with probably won't see you as just another nigger in the first place. So, like, what is, like,
it's unfortunate, man. It's extremely unfortunate because you just got to do better than that. Like, I don't, as a person, not even on no, if I'm black or if I'm white, like, the fact that you are mixed or whatever, you shouldn't even think about being in no white supremacist chat rooms saying nigger, or if they saying it to you, like, just as a human being with common sense, that should not be something that you want to do.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, sis, what were you doing there? What propelled you to say, oh, white supremacist chat room, click? Like, what? What right, was your like, thought process?
Yeah, that's dumb. So, like you said, but like you said, I don't know no Doja Cat. I don't care nothing about her. So, it wasn't nothing major to me. Once I saw it, I just kind of kept scrolling, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I shook my head, like, are you kidding me? Like, is this really?
And
like,
she issued that apology.
Yeah, but apparently, you know, it definitely struck a nerve because it ignited a whole hashtag in discussing with, you know, was it Doja Cat party over or something like that? That folks was ready to cancel her.
She had a lot of black female artists and stuff on these songs and a lot of support from our community. Mm. They was rocking with her, you know, so I think they felt the way.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know. Women's rap and stuff like that is those type of artists, even the different styles of rapping and producing their music, it's kind of at a forefront right now that I don't think we ever seen. Mm-hmm. As far as the diversity. So, mm-hmm. You know, people ain't feeling it. If you get hot, you know what I mean, you gotta take it and roll with it. If you let them down, they gonna be upset.
Yep, definitely. It's like a huge letdown. Yeah, well, we'll see if she recovers from this. I'm not sure how, but we'll see.
You never know.
You never know. All right, so now on to our main topic. So, yes, as I said earlier, because May is Mental Health Awareness Month, I've been doing episodes focused on mental health. Last week, I talked about trauma. Well, that's what the episode was called. And then this week, I'm talking more so about mental health and substance use. And specifically, we're discussing alcoholism. Before we get into everything, just to give a little history. You know, alcoholism, as we, along with substance use in general, as we know, has been a thing in the black community dating back to slavery. You know, if anyone ever watched the show Underground, I love that show. But there was an episode in which it showed how Massa would have these parties and the good slaves and the good niggers would be allowed to join. No, you need to go to bed. Go to bed now. Thank you. Would be allowed to come and join in the party, and they'd be able to drink liquor and booze. In some cases, mistress's friends would pick out the Mandingos and get to have their way with them. And as we all know, Massa was definitely raping us in the house whenever he wanted to. And so that alone had translated over, you know, of course, there was the Prohibition era where, you know, alcohol was banned and made illegal. But then that caused more crime, more looting, a whole lot of more issues. So then they not allow alcohol to be legal again. And so then over time, it definitely did start to play a part in a lot of destruction of Black families and homes and communities and whatnot. And so I have Watts on here to talk about it because he himself has gone through his journey of dealing with struggles with alcohol. And first and foremost, I said to this him earlier off the mic, but I want to say this on the mic. He just recently celebrated 999 days of sobriety, which is huge. So yes, I want to make sure I acknowledge that publicly on the mic and say, bro, I'm so proud of you. I know we've never really got to, as long as we've known each other, I realize we never really got to talk in depth and in detail about your journey. I just know I remember seeing you post things, and then like as we were podcasting together a few times, you know, I always was like, you know, okay, if we have alcohol, you're gonna be okay. But and then like when I was in grad school, I hit you up like, hey, bro, where can I find an AA meeting? I need this for a paper, you know, just because I was like, I need some help with this. But I realized we never really got to sit down and talk about it, and it's a sensitive subject, so I think that's probably why I never got to really fully approach you in asking about it one-on-one. But I know you're very public about sharing your story and just your journey and your overall testimony on social media, which I think is great because I'm a firm believer in feeling like being transparent can help the next person who's going through something similar. So that's why I, again, props to you for being so open and honest with people about your journey. So you know, I wanted you to be able to share with me and the people that will be listening to this, you know, how did you figure out, you know, that this was a problem, and the emotions you went through, you know, just give us the story, bro.
Yeah, I think with me, like you said, today was day 999 of me being sober. So we about 20 minutes away from day 1000. And that goes back to September the 4th, 2017. And really, I just got tired of it. I got tired of the feeling. I got tired of what came with it. My delinquency, the bad habits I picked up due to the drinking. And then I got tired of leaning on it as a crutch. For my feelings, my creativity, helped me go to sleep. It did so many things for me. And it just ran its course, especially starting at maybe 15 years old, I'd say, when I first started drinking. You know, I've done it long enough. I've been through enough good and bad. I had some fun times. I had some devastating times. Being arrested, car accidents, all that stuff, it kind of gets old. And I had to be transparent with everybody else in order to commit to it fully. So I made that video saying I was going to quit on September the 4th on my Instagram just because that's how I felt that day. But I had already been trying to stop for maybe a year before that. A lot of people don't know that. So I might go like 2 weeks, then I might go 3 weeks, then I might be drinking for a minute, then I might go another 2-3 weeks. But my friends played a major part in that because they're supportive in general. So they gonna support if I'm drinking, and they gonna support if I'm not. So, like, you know, we hang out together on the weekends. It was kind of our way of not only spending time with each other, but just it's stress-free when we all together in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we ain't in daddy mode, and we ain't at work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we started to get older, now we 25, 26 years old, you know, life is heavier now than when we was in college. So,
yeah,
you know, we needed time to bond with each other and kind of deal with some things. So we would just spend our time together on the weekends in our neighborhood. And so they just knew, you know, one day a watch might feel like drinking. Next weekend, he might not.
Mm-hmm.
And they respected that. So that made it easier for me because there's no pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they my real friends. So once I got to that level to where the people that mattered to me understood that I was serious, you know, it get easier after that. When I'm in the clubs or and I'm out and people want to offer me drinks, you know, then it's personal. Then I got to make sure I stand on what I'm supposed to stand on and tell people that I'm cool or I don't drink no more or, you know. And then it just turned into, like, everybody know. When I got to day 300, I went to the mall that day and I saw a guy that I hadn't saw in 10 years. But he knew it was day 300 when I saw him because of my social media. And so, like, those type of things affected me. People really keeping track of people I don't talk to, I don't see. Like, they knew how serious I was. And after that, you know, I go to AA from time to time, which I think is super beneficial. But, you know, everybody's life is different.
Right.
The people that know me and Johnny side by side whenever we out. That's my drinking partner. That's my whatever. And he didn't feel the same way I feel. Mm-hmm. Like when I came out and said, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm having a problem with this. It was kind of confusing to him because we do the same stuff.
Right.
Like we drink together the same, almost the same frequency, probably almost the same amount. And we've been doing it for so long at that point, like 6-7 years to where it was confusing. Cause he like, you know, how do my guys say he got a problem, but it don't bother me as much.
Right.
So, you know, that was a conversation we had. So it was deep, you know. I had to close a lot of other chapters. Close friends and family members that died. That had certain situations surrounding those deaths that I never closed those chapters. I never went back to their grave sites after the funerals or, you know what I mean? I never really dealt with it. You know, I used drinking to help me kind of cope with those things. The depression I deal with, the anxiety, I just used drinking to calm my nerves. I used drinking to, as a pick-me-up, you know, kind of getting rid of that. It turned me into who I always been. Like, every day now I wake up and I'm me. And I never really felt like that. Going back to around that time when I was 15, 16 years old. So it was freeing to take those steps. It's still a battle. I know people that relapse after 20 years. So it's not over. You know what I mean? But I wake up every day and I try to stand on it and do the best I can with that, which ain't as easy as I make it seem sometimes or sound or when I talk to people. And I don't give myself enough credit for stopping like I did. But it's definitely still tough on me. It's still a battle for sure.
Yeah. So something I wanted to touch on, you know, like I said, I used Swimming Pools by Kendrick Lamar as the intro song for this episode for a reason, because, you know, a lot of us love Kendrick Lamar. You know, I'm a fan of Kendrick Lamar. And I remember when he did first come out with that album, Good Kid, Mad City, and that song got all the radio play. And at the time we were in college. So because a lot of the because of the words and the chorus, that was like a turn up song, the pour up. Drank, headshot, drank, you know. And then on the chorus, you know, we talk about why you babysitting only 2 or 3 shots. And that's time, you know, we say that like, oh, you babysitting y'all drink. You need to drink up, like, come on, finish your shot. You know, that's the terminology and that's part of the turn up and party culture that we do live in. And but like, you know, as you know, we've gotten older and really, you know, when you really listen to the lyrics, a lot of what you talked about is what he says in the very first verse of the song. saying that he grew up around some people living their life in the bottle. Granddaddy had the golden flask backstroke every day in Chicago. Some people like the way it feels. Some people want to kill their sorrows. Some people want to fit in with the popular. That was my problem. And a lot, that's a lot of common reasons as to why people do end up developing issues with alcohol and just substance use in general. It does become a way to cope. And it is a way sometimes to just fit in and feel like you have that belonging in a sense with a certain group of people. Some people, it is just, you know, it's what they were exposed to growing up. It was part of whether it depended on where they lived. It was like, this is what we do. This is an everyday thing. There's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, kind of like with you having the conversation with Johnny, shout out to Johnny. He the homie too. you know, just the difference. Sure. Okay. How is it affecting him in this way, but it's not affecting me? And being able to, and that can be hard to understand because, you know, alcohol is legal. You know, it doesn't all, just because you drink doesn't mean you're going to become someone who's an alcoholic and have a problem. But just because, but also on the flip side, doesn't mean you shouldn't be careful either, because the shit can sneak up on you. It happens to people who have never had right. trauma, never dealt with depression, never dealt with anxiety. And all it takes is, you know, then, like I said, they like the way it feels, you know, it gets them feeling loose and happy, you know. There's a, you know, even my field when I've met, you know, dealing with clients and I'm doing their assessments and they're talking about their substance use history. I have the folks that literally grew up. That's what they saw in their homes. And it, you know, like I said, it just became a part of them. And then there's the other people who had two parent households, never went without, you know, some of them having college degrees. But depending on who they hang around, it was a social thing. So they started trying a little bit of this, trying a little bit of that, experimenting here. Next thing you know, they're addicted. Next thing you know, they're alcoholic. And I really don't even like to say the terms alcoholic. I know that in AA, that is a part of saying, hi, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic. I got to go to an AA meeting for just to as a project for class when I was in grad school. But, you know, with being in social work, we're taught not to use a lot of those labels because we don't want to define someone by their mental illness or their, you know, their diagnosis. So if I'm saying alcoholic, I'd be like, I don't like saying that word. But I know in that culture, for people like you who have had that struggle, that is something that bonds y'all together, that y'all understand what it's like. So I definitely get that for sure. You know, and then something else, and just wanting to throw it out there as far as, you know, alcoholism and just our overall turn up culture. I think that's what makes it sometimes hard to fully understand, and what does cause a lot of misconceptions and stigma surrounding it. You know, there's the terms of someone being a functional alcoholic. You know, we hear the terms of, hi, honey. We hear the terms of someone being the angry drunk. You know, things. Hi. Yeah, that's the baby. Hi, baby. Yes. both our sons is up right now. And see my son going, hi, baby. So yeah, and so Hi. How are you? You good?
Both the babies
is up, right? and so that like I said, it does somewhat cause people to have a certain stereotypical thought of what it means to have a problem with alcohol, or what an alcoholic mama. Is. I'm a mommy. Dada. Yeah, that's your dada. Yes, you're right. So, you know, like, people will think, oh, because this person goes to work every day. Oh, they go to work every day. They take care of their family. They don't have a problem with alcohol, but you know, they're sneaking, you know, drinking, and they're consuming a lot more than a person should. You know, it may not impair this area of life, but it's impairing these other areas. And so, even when I'm going through assessments and diagnosing, I have to look at all of those different symptoms and criteria. So it's like, okay, you know, and I've gotten people that feel right. like, you know, I drink socially, or, you know, I use marijuana. Yeah. You know, I've tried this, but I don't have an issue. And it's like, okay, we don't have an issue, but we've had 3 DUIs in a year. That might be an issue. We don't have an issue, but your wife is talking about leaving you because you need to get this drinking problem under control. That might be an issue, you know. And because everyone is different, I can't, of course, make assumptions ever. So that's why I always ask people the exact same questions, you know, going through the different criteria and symptoms and whatnot. Because, you know, just like you said, Watts, for some people, it might be more on the mild side where they might be like, oh, it's starting to become a problem. And then other people it is more severe and they may not be in that state of change to recognize that this is an issue. And, you know, something else I wanted to touch on, you mentioned coping with the depression and the anxiety. So do you feel like and you said you started drinking at age 15. So do you feel like do you feel like the mental health aspect of dealing with anxiety, depression exacerbated the alcohol use? Or do you feel like the alcohol use was already a problem at the time you come to realize that you were dealing with the anxiety and depression? He playing. He see. We told y'all the kids don't have no regard for time or nothing during this quarantine. Oh, he's sad.
I think it's.
No, it's okay, bro. I know.
They don't care. Yeah, he's sad. I think it goes hand in hand.
Okay. You said you felt like it went hand in hand for you.
Yeah, I feel like it's hand in hand as far as once I got older, I feel like my issues were deeper or more on a grander scale,
mm-hmm.
and it started to affect my mental and my emotional. Then it probably started to affect my drinking at the same time.
Okay.
Because I don't think I really found another way to another outlet, especially not a healthy one. So I think it kind of was like, this is what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I just started to feel better once I dealt with other things, that it kind of reduced the need for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I still wanted to do it because of the lifestyle I was living.
Mm-hmm.
The way I like to be out, the way we wear that, being able to hold our liquor as a badge of honor.
Yep. You know. If you can't, don't hold your liquor, you don't need to come to the party. That'd be the first thing we say.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like we drinkers, so it's like, you know what I mean? That's just what we do. We pull up and we drink with whoever. It was kind of our thing. So even that type of stuff, like shaking those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
And like literally though, the last time I had a drink, it was like I could feel it. I was at work on a Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and I could just feel it in my system, and like I was just so agitated, and I'm like, you know what, it's just over with.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally started to hate the feeling. So I'm like, yeah, it got so bad and so irritating, and I'm like, yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
But my 27th birthday, which my birthday is Monday, actually. But
it is coming up.
Yeah, my birthday is Monday. But so my 27th birthday was on a Thursday, and I went out to Tiki Bob's and clubbed it up. But I made a deal with myself that I wasn't going to get drunk. Mm-hmm. I was only going to take three shots. I wasn't trying to spend any money. So I didn't even, like, you know how people do, buy an outfit, buy some shoes for the, you know, you want to look good on your birthday.
Right.
So everybody know I got shoes. So I just pulled out a pair of shoes that I had,
pants that I had. Only thing I did is bought a little shirt. You know, it's summertime, a little t-shirt. It wasn't nothing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, I'm not spending no money today. I'm not going to get drunk today. Like, I'm trying to get these things in order. I'm trying to get my money right. I'm trying to get my mind right. Like, you know, that's where I just was at with it. Mm-hmm. And I got out and I started having fun and I just lost control. Like, I just got caught up in it. My friends and being in the club, and I was happy. I was in a good mental space, and I just had a ball, but I went against what I told myself. Yeah. And I didn't tell anybody else. So it wasn't a red flag to anybody else. It was only something that I went into that night holding in internally. Mm. And I felt so bad the next day. I'm hearing from all my friends and my people, they like, man, you had a ball last night. Like, you was turned up. You was clowning. You looked so happy. You had so much fun. And all that is good. They like, man, you was happy. Because I am. I was happy. I'm happy now. But I was happy. And I was in a good mental space, the best mental space I probably had been in at that time in my adult life. But I knew what I told myself before I left the house. And I reneged on it, and so I had to hold myself accountable. So then I really started laying the groundwork to, like, being done for real. And it still took, you know, 90 days after that before I stopped for good. But that was, like, the last time that I felt like it wasn't under control. And, like, if I didn't stop, it would get to a point of no return. So I think that was, I think I might've got drunk like one other time after that. But yeah, I was done after that though.
Okay. And, I know, like, when you were sharing your drink, you know, there's times I'd be a TV boss, I'm like, bro, and I see you out and stuff. And, I did always wonder, how did you get to that point where you could still go to bars and go to clubs, still be able to do the normal things you would do with the homies and not feel triggered? Or maybe you did feel triggered, and when you were, how did you handle that?
Actually I never have, and mainly because, like I was saying earlier, my friends, like, they really my friends, so it's no pressure. You know what I mean? If I said I wanted to stop drinking, then I'm going to stop drinking. They going to respect it. But I think the main reason it's like that is because on the level that I function and I live my life, I got that type of respect already.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I don't got to – once I started to really – be myself and live the way I felt like I was supposed to, and not be feel like I was pressured to do things a certain way or act a certain way, think a certain way because of maybe the habits I picked up over time or where we come from. Once I just, like, really start being myself, it's like nothing nobody could tell me. You know what I mean? Because I wake up every day and I'm really myself. So I don't got to prove nothing to nobody. You know, all that type of stuff. You know, a lot of times we feel like you got to prove a point to somebody.
Yeah.
When you don't deal with your trauma, you always feel like you got to prove a point that you're not broken or that you, this ain't the issue or whatever. I had those moments. Yep. And, you know, once I got over that, it's like I wake up every day and I be myself. One of my closest friends told me recently, I told him this. I was like, you know, now I'm myself. For years, I wasn't myself. I'm just now, you know, as of late, the last couple of years, waking up and being myself. When I told him that, he said, you know, it's crazy to hear me say that, because if I haven't been my 100% self this whole time, and I've been dealing with all this stuff or living this certain type of way, he said, I'm still in any group that you put my name in, I'm still one of the top five people in those group, in any group, no matter what group you want to put me in, like, I'm net solid and net high character type of person that if I wasn't 100% then like, that's crazy to believe, you know what I'm saying? Because I always, for the most part, been the same. And that was a huge compliment to me, knowing that, you know, in a lot of situations, oftentimes I'm putting up a front, maybe even acting like I'm happy or acting like I don't got this issue, or maybe it's my ego. And for people to still feel like, you know, I've been a great person, a great friend,
yeah,
you know, all this time, you know, I mean, it like made me feel good. But now I'm really like myself for real. And it's peaceful, you know, so, yeah, no, it's no pressure. No pressure at all.
Yeah. I was wondering, what was like your experience, like the first time you went to AA, for those that don't know, Alcoholics Anonymous, what was that like for you, having to, was that kind of like a, ooh, okay, I'm, I know I've embraced this, but now I'm really embracing this because I'm here type of moment for you? Or was it, did you feel like it was easy to go in there because you had come to grips like, yeah, I have a problem, I need
help? Yeah. I ain't going to say it was easy because I think that's disrespectful to the people that got to go every week. But I was committed for sure. Okay. I was committed for sure. I can never remember when the first time I went. I don't know if it was a year or if it was 30 days because I made videos both times. So I don't know. I don't remember how early I went, but I just like the energy. I like the humility that come with it. I go to an open discussion group on the south side near Garfield Park. It's good to hear 20 different stories, 20 different perspectives on, you know, this one topic that we might talk about this week. So you kind of can, somebody like me who kind of soak all that up and say, man, this person went 10 years before and relapsed. So, you know what I mean? Like, shoot, they done made it way farther than I done made it so far. So I can't let up. Or, you know, it's people who never relapsed that might be 20 plus years in. It's like, dang. Yeah. You know what I mean? When you at a year, you like, man, I got a long way to go. But it give you that focus and that motivation. And, you know, those people are very supportive.
Yeah.
The group that I go to is mostly like middle-aged, older white folk, just because of the area. It was close to my house, so that's the one I went to. I didn't really think too much about it, who was going to be there. So it's been people in there who might tell me, like, you know, it's a younger group that meet, you know, so-and-so. You want to be more around people that's your age and probably dealing with, you know, you can relate to better. But to me, it's all the same. So I stuck with that group this whole time.
Okay.
And I got my 1 year and 2 year tokens. And I have my 3 year on September the 4th.
All right.
So I'm almost there. You know, I'm excited. And I just like being able to, I'm transparent, but everybody know that, you know, I just like giving the game to whoever. I ain't ashamed. I think that's a big part of it.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, that's major.
I say, I did also want to ask, is there any alcoholism or mental health issues that have run in your family that you might have not been aware before you went through your experience that you became aware of afterwards? Or do you feel like a lot, like you kind of like how you said earlier, you know, being drinkers, that was just part of culture, it's part of the social life, how you guys, family and friends just hung out, connected and all that stuff?
My father's a drinker.
Okay.
And probably every day. Ain't no telling for how long. But since I stopped drinking, I think he went a couple months, maybe probably three to six months, somewhere in there, sober. Okay. And that's probably the longest he went, and who knows how long. But he tried to get himself together, mm-hmm. get healthy. So he had stopped drinking. I think he ended up losing like 50 pounds. He was being active. He was working out and stuff. This was
wow,
maybe a year, year and a half ago. So I think he got a better grip on it now. But I don't know if it's ever something that he has shaped totally.
Okay.
Not because he doesn't get belligerent drunk every day. You know, some people do. Some people right. get belligerent drunk three, right. 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably why it's like, for maybe in his mind, not a big deal.
Okay.
You know, I think what would probably end up having happen is his health. He's getting older, 55 now.
Yep.
You know, you're drinking every day for 30 years. It's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
And his so liver, he got health issues,
kidneys,
so
all that.
Maybe some serious. Yeah, and he got bad knees and ankles, so he gained a lot of weight in the last 10 years. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe the health can, if he has some real health concerns, I think that might be one of the only things that could wake him up. Besides that, like I said, he ain't getting pissy drunk every day, so.
Yeah.
He just be sitting back vibing, but I would love to see him shake that for sure. But that's definitely where I get it from, because he's with it for sure, for sure. And I know I was with it.
Yeah.
When I'm 12 years, I was turned up. I drank a whole fifth type turned up.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah,
so my mother, though, she barely drinks. So, you know, my father's the one.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I will say it is a trend that males are more tend to be dealing with alcohol issues. I'm trying to remember from my addictions class, and I think some more so of Black males for sure. And I've heard as far as why reasons people, like I said, we named a lot of them. You know, it is to cope with sorrows and. Some of it is just to fit in. And then I've also people that have never liked to drink, you know, like the smell of alcohol make them sick. But I've heard stories of people who used alcohol to somewhat self-medicate their mental health problems that had pre-existed prior to the substance use, because medication wasn't working, or they, you know, they were struggling finding the right type of medication to help. And so because alcohol is an antidepressant, you know, dealing with and then anxiety and, you know, the chemical imbalances and all that in the brain, it became their way of coping with their mental health. Same with people who have used drugs, because that a lot of their mental health, and especially those dealing with PTSD, it causes them so much distress, and where the drugs in some ways mellowed them out. And so it's very common actually that mental health and substance abuse coincide together. And I think sometimes people don't realize that there is a comorbidity with that. I always struggle with that word. and I know people have their different opinions, you know, especially like things with alcohol and marijuana. It is a little, you know, more controversial as far as like, okay, is this okay really for us? Like, should we really be drinking? Because we know that drinking excessively causes these problems. You know, with marijuana, there is that debate where it's like, okay, should we be smoking marijuana? Because although, you know, it creates this great high feeling that, you know, I've experienced myself a few times. a lot of people feel like, you know, is it really a drug you can be addicted to? You know, for a while, longest time it was considered the gateway drug. I've heard people say they feel like cannabis use disorder shouldn't be in the DSM-5 as a substance use disorder. But I think the thing we have to remember with any type of drug, you know, even people who, you know, prescription pills are people who get prescribed medication and things. Well, I'm not addicted to drugs. This is prescribed, but it is a opiate, or it's this a benzodiazepine. And even though it's prescribed, you can still develop some type of dependency or addiction to it. So I think the thing we all have to be careful and mindful of is, you know, addiction is not just what you get out on the street. It's not just stuff that people lace or what's illicit. Sometimes it is, you know, and it's not just alcohol and drugs. We can have addictions to food. We can have addictions to money. We can have addictions to toxic relationships. You know, anything that comes in and disrupts your functioning in a way that causes you to feel like you need that to cope or survive, that warrants addiction, gambling and addiction. And so we have to make sure we're being mindful of that. And when we are partaking in different substances now, you know, like I said, to each his own, everyone has their own opinions and their beliefs. And I know sometimes I have felt somewhat conflicted because it's being a social worker and trying to help people to reach sobriety and being a therapist and whatnot. But I do drink. I have partaken in marijuana before. And so, but I also keep in the back of my mind, like, I know I can't get too crazy, you know? And I think that is a lot of, that's what probably is, you know, for me, not everyone has that same advantage in being able to recognize, like, right away, okay, you know, in doing this excessively, it can be a problem. And for the people who don't have that knowledge, or for never anyone, no one has ever told them that, depending on what their upbringing was, that never became that never crossed their minds. And so I just, the message to everyone in this, whatever you, whether you drink, don't drink, you smoke cigarettes, marijuana, you know, whatever the case may be, just be understanding that addiction and substance use can happen to anyone. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter where you come from. It can literally happen to any and everybody. And so we have to understand that addiction is not, it's not something that's just affects certain social classes. It doesn't just affect, does it affect certain social classes and races more? Yes, but it can happen to anybody. And so in knowing that, we have to be more empathetic and understanding of the struggle and the journey that people who like Watts have had to go through to obtain that sobriety, and the everyday struggle that it is. And the fact that, like you said, the battle isn't over. You know, there's going to be, as we get older, I'm sure there's going to be new hurdles that come that might cause a trigger here and there, but we have to, and we have to be understanding of that and support those that we know going through the journey and going, fighting the everyday battle, be willing to understand, to be informed, so that way we can have more of these conversations. We can decrease the stigma surrounding that. And so that just overall we can, you know, hopefully help to reduce a lot of the mental health and substance use issues that's happening and affecting our Black community. And just, you know, of course, I'm all about setting up for the next generation. So, and just wrapping up here, Watts, what advice would you give for anyone who may possibly have gone through similar journey like you and may not be sure, like, okay, is this really a problem? Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, just trying to figure out, okay, do I need help? Or maybe someone out there who has a family member or friend and they're seeing things that they're not sure, okay, how do I approach them to let them know, like, this is a problem? What advice would you give for people in those situations?
Firstly, for anybody that's going through it, you can't be afraid. You can't feel less than. Nothing to be embarrassed about. You just got to own it. If this is your journey, it's the purpose to it. And people know I started my business off me battling with depression, anxiety, alcoholism. I birthed alone is a lie because of that, and it's one of the best things I ever did. And I'm just not afraid to, you know, some people have their reservation, but I'm just not afraid to speak out about mine. And I think that's what we need. Mm-hmm. I think if it's because what I learned too, once I started speaking out, that my friends were going through similar situations. And I'm keeping my situation from them the same way that they're keeping their situation from me, mm-hmm. because of how we raised, or, you know, just all kind of different things, stereotypes. You feel like you're alone, i.e. alone is a lie.
Yeah, you better plug your stuff.
It started to solidify things for me, though, when I start telling my friends. So, you know, it's just, it's no fear. You know, you got to let that guard down. And like you spoke about earlier, like I was just telling Johnny maybe a week ago, not even a week, a couple of days ago, like quarantine and all this mess. My friend, I lost friends during this time and stuff like that. Like I need a therapist. And not because I feel like I got so many issues, so much stuff going on in my head, so many things I can't sort out, but because I could get tired. Tired of work. You know what I mean? And just being able to have an outlet to where I won't see any negative repercussions from it. You know, because maybe it's some stuff I don't want to put on my girl or my mom or my father, you know what I mean, or my children.
Yeah.
That's safe and healthy. And, you know, I can go in there and say, man, my job got me fucked up and it's been stressing me out or, you know what I mean? And then I can get some get back, the therapy that I'm looking for to where I can sort out my thoughts and get it out of my head even and go be the best man I can be, the best father I can be, the best husband, best whatever it is you're going to be, the best wife. You know what I mean? So, like you said earlier, I do think therapy is it's the next step for me. I think definitely need it for a lot of people because not being a drinker or a smoker. Now I just deal with stuff, you know what I mean, head on. And, you know, sometimes it gets overbearing with no real escape. Outside of that, like, I want to get back in shape. I think the best thing to do is find healthy means. So if it's running, working out, if it's you got to create a creative way to express yourself, painting or whatever it is, you know, everybody know I write, but I don't. So, you know, those type of things I got to get back to. I used to love the weight room. I kind of got away from it. You know what I mean? I think it'd be beneficial to me. You know, I kind of got away from writing once a week like I used to. Those are things I'm about to pick back up to help me release some of this built up tension and even anger or any of these feelings that I'm having, you know, those three outlets. So it's just knowing yourself and finding what works for you. But you just can't be afraid. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You absolutely cannot be afraid. You can't be afraid to look at your spouse and say, I'm having an issue. You can't be afraid to look at your mother and say, I'm having an issue. Your best friend and say, you're having an issue. You just got to be honest. And if people feel away, if they judge you, if their response isn't healthy, then maybe that's the exposure you need to cut ties with these people and to better yourself. You know, it just comes with time. So outside of that, you got to 100% commit to it. And I think it helps to tell people I'm struggling. Accountability partners, even with like working out, you know, having an accountability partner is super vital. So, you know, just those small things. They don't call us alcoholics at 25. They wait till we 40. 40 might be too late. If you are like me, you're alcoholic at 27, you just are what you are, you know, do something about it. But, you can't deny it. So, you know, it's stressful because life is hard. You know, we like to unwind, you know, which, like you said, it's easier for men to be more on the hard liquors because it's distasteful for a woman to drink a fifth of Patron.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's frowned upon. I mean, it's distasteful for a man to do it also, but it'd be more acceptable.
Accepted. Yep.
So, I think that's why it's a little bit of a disconnect or a duality, you know, when it comes to the hard liquor and men get, so they fall deeper faster.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's something we got to watch also. But even the wine and like I said, the people that smoke, you know, if it's an issue, you know yourself. You know, I mean, a lot of times we don't listen to our innermost thoughts too often
mm-hmm.
when it goes against our comfort zone. So sometimes you got to break out of that, and you know, it could always be better.
Yeah.
You see stories of people lose 200 pounds. You know, when they was 400 pounds, they probably felt defeated.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm sure they feel better that they gave up what was holding on to them, or what they were holding on to, I should say, rather, and made the best of this life that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you mentioned in knowing yourself, because, like, I know when back in college, I would hear stories about people like, yeah, I can smoke and study and get A's. And I'm like, how? how do you do that? And it's like,
gotta know yourself.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. I know I can't do that. And so that's why I've never, like, even when I have partaken, I've never been that person that's like during the week or so a lot, because it's just like, I know how I function. So it's like, even if I do partake, it's with the same circle of friends. I'm not recklessly doing it with people I don't know. And, you know, just, that's not something I know I need to do during the week. And then even with drinking, I do love my wine. Don't get me wrong. But even with that, I've been, you know, I make sure, like, most time if I'm drinking, it, you know, sometimes it's been with dinner, but that's most like on the weekend when I do just kind of want to unwind, or my TGIT, you know, when I was watching Scandal, How I Get Away with Murder, mm-hmm. You know. But as far as I know, as far as like making an everyday thing, I'm like, I know I can't do that. One, because I don't want to. Two, money, because that stuff does cost money.
Right.
And then just overall, it's like, I know that's not, I wouldn't be built that way to be able to function and being a mother and with my job. And plus, like I said, I wouldn't want that to be that becomes something I feel like I have to do every day, you know. And there's people that get, when people, you start getting to that point where you feel like I have to do this every day, I'm like, that's when things become an issue. So that's why I try my best to make sure, like, you know, of course, just always being mindful of those things. Like, yes, I enjoy my wine. Yes, I like to turn up, but you know, even when drinking, like, have I drank to get drunk? Oh yeah, I've definitely said, yeah, I'm getting drunk tonight. It's $2 Tuesdays at Kilroy's shots, you know. But every time right. that I have drank, it hasn't been with the intention to get drunk. It's just because I enjoy the taste of the flavor of what I'm drinking, and it is just it's been a relaxed social thing. So yeah, it's just a good point in knowing yourself and being honest with yourself. And like you said, being able to recognize, like, when that line has been crossed, okay, this is no longer just a social thing or just, you know, for fun or enjoyment. Now this is starting to impact my everyday life, and I need to get help.
Yep, or everyday relationships, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Yep, that too, for sure.
Yeah. It's important.
Yeah, it definitely is. I want to thank you so much, bro, for coming on and sharing your story. And like I said, the fact that you're able to be so transparent and honest is huge, because not everyone is able and willing to do that, because I know this is sensitive stuff. So I thank you so much for coming on here and sharing. And for anyone who's listening, I hope that you were informed. I hope that this gave you some insight. For anyone who may possibly wondering if they're struggling with similar issues with substance use, I hope Watt's story helped you to know that you're not alone in this. There's plenty of other people who've gone through exactly what you're going through or have gone through. And that, you know, if you're working on making a change, or, you know, steady like Watt's, you in that 999. Well, now it is 1,000. It's 12:28 a.m. He's at 1,000 now. Hey, all right, glory. 1,000 days. 1,000 days. You know, if that's the point you are in your journey, just keep pushing, keep moving, you know, get people around you that's going to support you, hold you accountable. And if you need those people that ain't, don't be afraid to cut them off, because at the end of the day, you only get one life to live. And you got to take care of that life. And like Watt said, you're not alone. Being alone is a lie. So, you know, know that there are resources. Know that you can get help. Know that you can get support, and that you can make it through. And if you're knowing anyone that's going through it, let them know that you don't mind being a support for them and helping them, so that they don't feel alone in being able to, or feel afraid to come to you and saying that, hey, I have a problem. Can you help me with this? Or can you be a support for me through this?
Right. I wanted to add one more thing if I can.
Go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
For those who might be battling with the AA and the NA, Narcotics Anonymous, if you kind of interested in those things, it's a website. Mm-hmm. So you could go to the website and see all the meetings and the locations, the times, the date, the frequency, what type of meeting. Some are discussions, some are, it's all different kinds, you know what I mean? Even tell you if it's wheelchair accessible and all that stuff. I always forget what the website is. It's unfortunate. But I want to say in our city, I believe it's ndaa.org or .com, one of the two.
Okay.
But it gives you the full list, what side of town. You know, if you're on the south side, you might want to go look for the south side meetings. And it's pretty organized and easy to read and understand. So if you are, you know, on the fence, man, that's a great program, great resources, great sponsors. Like I said, people that hold you accountable. So hit the web, search for the AA. And it should come right up and get you right to that website, man. So take advantage if need be.
Yes, definitely. And in case you are wondering about mental health and substance abuse services in the pandemic, like my agency that I work for is open. I won't disclose that while we're on the episode, because I told some things about myself. But there are places that are still open. There are therapy, if you're looking to get into therapy, like me and my therapist, we've been doing virtual sessions over Zoom. So there are people that provide virtual online sessions. There are AA and NA meetings who may be, or sponsors, I'm sure, that are providing virtual sessions through Zoom, or, you know, doing, like I've been doing sessions with our clients over telephone or Zoom. So there's still a way to get help even in this quarantine, in this pandemic. And I know that's definitely affecting all of our mental and emotional health in some sort of way or fashion. So like I said, again, don't be afraid to admit that you need to talk to someone. Don't be afraid to admit that you're needing help. It's honestly the best thing you can do for yourself. And just know that the people, the right people that's going to support you will be there for you. And the people that's, you know, they look down on you, if they judge you for it, they're not the right people to have. So just, again, know that you're not alone in whatever it is that you're going through.
Yeah. Also, one other thing that popped in my mind, you know, we got a lot of apps, Sober Grid, SoberGrid. It's an app you can download. If you were, say, in the case that you were feeling like you were going to relapse, you can alert the app and people can reach out to you and help get you through those moments of weakness. So, yeah, Sober Grid is dope, too. I almost forgot about that. So you can always download Sober Grid, and you can get help from, you never know who it could be. It might be me. You know, because we in the area and I get the alert, you know, you just never know. So Sober Grid, you could tell somebody about that who might be trying to keep up. I got a friend who had 800 days. I'm at 1,000. I got, you know what I mean? So, you know, we trying to keep it together. So Sober Grid also.
Definitely, for sure. And of course, before we go, you need to tell the folks about Alone is a Lie. You know, let them know what that's all about. before alone we wrap up officially.
yeah, alone in July. It's been about 3 years, maybe, since I started alone in July. Focus on the depression, anxiety, anything mental health related, really, mm-hmm. and then of course the alcoholism. Once we get some playtime outside, and life starts to get back to somewhat normal. I don't know what normal is going to be after this pandemic, but once it starts to get back right, I'm going to have my own class. I hate to say therapy or AA type meeting, but you know, I'm going to be holding classes weekly, bi-weekly, whatever it's going to be, whatever end up working for me, to where it can be a safe space for people to come. And you can just listen if you want to listen, or, you know, if you got something you want to get off your chest, you know, where we all on the same page. And it kind of got that AA group therapy session type of vibe. Mm-hmm. So that's my plan with Alone in July. As soon as I can get a official building and some that's type of space, up. You know what I mean? But my Instagram for that is alone_is_alie, L-I-E. So, you know, to follow me, got some questions, ask me questions, the resources I got, I give to you. And as soon as we can move around again, I'm going to take some more steps in building that up, man. Hopefully I can be one of the most accredited programs in the nation soon. That's my plan.
Yes, yes, think big, yes. You know, we might have to do something. We might have to partner, because, like, I've had ideas about having some type of event catering to mental health, because y'all, you know, that's my passion. So we might have to link back up in the future, bro. Once this stuff all settles, we're gonna have to figure something out. Because I know I would love to participate in some kind of way. I would love to support.
Yeah, you know, we got the other our little group, me and my three business partners, for our people. On Instagram, the number 4, our people. You know, we had 4 events last year.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, I did see some of those. I was sad I wasn't able to make it, probably because I was working.
You know, open community discussions about the issues that we have. And we talked about love, trauma, mental health, you know, all type of different stuff. I think we had 4 events. Once the city and the world start opening back up, we're going to do some more, but yeah, I'm all for mental health discussions, events, all that. You know, I'm with it.
Hey, yeah, let's hope Rona gets her act together and get the heck up out of here so we can do something.
Right, we got business to take care of.
Okay, look, I got things to do.
man.
Please, thanks again so much for coming on, Watts, and thanks y'all to everyone who's listening. Make sure y'all follow The Free Space on Facebook and Instagram at The Free Space Podcast. Follow on Twitter at @the_free_space. You can email the podcast at thefreespacepod@gmail.com. Remember to follow on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher, subscribe on Apple podcast, leave a review, because I love those. I need to like some more. I read some of my reviews in the last episode. I'd like to read some more in the future. I'm also Google Podcasts. Again, thanks y'all so much for tuning in. This is episode 53. There's Something in This Liquor, featuring Watts, my bro.
Yes.
And y'all be blessed.
Peace.